Welcome back to another edition of the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish podcast with Jim Hill. It's January 15th, and this is a Bandcamp exclusive episode dealing with the just announced today, April 2nd closure of Lights Motor Action. And to bring that topic to a discussion, we need to bring in one Mr. Jim Hill. Jim, how's it going?
Not bad, Lynn. You?
Not bad at all. Lights Motor Action barely will hit its 11-year anniversary at Disney's Hollywood Studios and before its closure. A couple of things. One, what does this closure mean in terms of the scope and scale of changes at Disney's Hollywood Studios?
For those folks who are critical of the way Disney is handling this reinvention of the park, it's going to be another piece of fodder for them. I mean, face it, I know Lights Motor Action never really delivered the way it was supposed to,
no.
But it was supposed to drive people deep back into the park and a 5,000-seat stadium, and it never quite did what it was supposed to. But even so, taking this out of the inventory at a time when there really is so little to do at that park is going to be kind of difficult for some people to take. But on the other hand, when you factor in that Star Wars Land is 14 acres,
yep,
and Toy Story Land is at least that in a weirdly elongated way,
mm-hmm,
and we still have that third land that Disney hasn't talked about yet. These things have to be built somewhere, given that the Streets of America, they're pulling down the lights right now and packing them away.
Yep.
And once they get that going, you're going to see all those facades come down. And then right behind that goes Lights Motor Action.
So I guess my question is with Lights Motor Action, why that and why now?
This is a park, Disney Hollywood Studios, it doesn't have a whole lot to offer at this point.
Yeah, that's my question. Why close this now? Why not wait a year?
Disney is absolutely thrilled with the way Force Awakens has delivered. It's blown past all sorts of domestic box office estimates. It's well on track to be the top grossing film in history worldwide. There was a plan in place that you know, will go at a slower speed, but to see the way this film is going and just the anticipation that's out there now for Rogue One, which hits December of 2016, and then Episode 8, which drops summer of 2017. It's like, this is not a drill, folks. You know, we actually kickstarted a phenomenon. And if we're going to cash in on this as early as possible, we can't baby step it. We have to move at flank speed, and that's what they're doing.
You think that the success of Force Awakens has sped up the demolition of Lights Motor Action?
Absolutely. There was a version of this plan where you worked on expanding parking lot. There was...
Right, right. And I think we talked about this, right? So the parking lot that's directly... it's a cast member parking that's directly in front of Echo Lake. That was originally going to be part of the land.
Disney dreamed that Force Awakens would do as well as it's doing right now, that it would become this pop culture phenomenon. And Iger views this as part of his Disney company legacy. Remember, Iger is supposedly walking out the door in 2018.
Sure.
I know.
Okay, sure.
Yes, if the board persuades him to hang on for another year or two, he doesn't want to leave before Star Wars Land is open. He wants it, ready to go now. The fact that they're going to throw lots of money and speed up this project, that just gives you some idea of how excited Disney is about this particular brand, this IP. Now, conversely, though, you may have noticed that Pizza Planet is closing down on the 19th.
Yeah, so this is my question. So Pizza Planet by Muppets is closing down. Streets of America is closing down. Lights Motor Action is closing down. That's giving Disney a clear shot, essentially, from the existing Star Tours area all the way back to the end of the park. Is that land become part of Star Wars, become part of Toy Story, or is it this third thing that hasn't been talked about yet?
As of today...
Today, January 15th, Friday.
Yeah, just this is a fluid situation,
yeah,
folks.
Yeah.
Muppet Vision 3D is staying put, all right? In fact, the redo of Pizza Planet is to change out that restaurant so it then supports Muppets.
So it'll be the Gonzo-themed restaurant?
Well, no, actually, it looks like they may be circling back to the Swedish Chef's cooking school, which was the original idea for this area. Just to stress here, it's still going to be quick serve, and my understanding is they're still going to serve pizza. In the original iteration of this restaurant is it would be the quick serve to complement the Great Gonzo's Pandemonium Pizza Parlor. There's still a belief that they do need quick service, but the gimmick is that as you're standing in line, you'd see the Swedish Chef, you know, doing an overhead video, giving cooking lessons. The Muppets are right now are in kind of a precarious situation. I mean, just this week, Paul Lee, who's the head of entertainment for ABC Network, to be specific, Paul's title is the chief of the ABC Entertainment Group.
Sure.
Just talked flat out about how the Muppets TV show, the one that debuted in ABC this September, really hasn't delivered the goods. I mean, it just, they wanted a huge hit. It's done decently, but the belief is that they had the wrong showrunner in place, so they brought in a new
That's interesting, because you and I had talked last month that the showrunner had left.
Yep, they brought in a brand new guy to ride herd on the show, and Paul spoke very highly of the five scripts that he's seen for the last shows of the season.
Okay, so Jim, real quick, let's explain to our listeners, what's a showrunner?
It's just what it says. He's the guy who runs the show. He's the guy who makes sure that there are scripts in the pipeline, there are celebrities lined up to appear on these things, that people know when to show up to rehearse, to shoot, that sort of thing. It's the overall vision of the show, establishes the tone.
He's sort of like the chief operating officer of the...
Very much so, though, in a weird sort of way, over this very, very sharply focused world.
Yeah.
In the case of the Muppets, just the belief is that if they can get these five new shows to get sampled by a bigger audience. I mean, right now, the question is, does the show get renewed? And then in season two, with this new showrunner who gets a whole season rather than five shows to fix the show. I genuinely want this to happen because, for example, in California, we've just had the Aladdin musical spectacular shut down. So the Frozen, brand new Frozen musical, can start being presented in the Hyperion Theater out there this summer, which then means that the Muppets can come back into their...
They took Muppets out to put Frozen in DCA.
Yeah. There's a belief within the company that the Muppets are never going to be Star Wars. They're never going to be that monster success, but properly groomed, lovingly tended, this will grow into an IP that manages to please the folks like myself who grew up with the Muppets and nostalgic about them, and bring the new audience in.
I've really liked the shows. I've watched every episode. I think they have individual scenes. Mm-hmm. They do good 10-minute stretches of every show, but I don't think they've put a complete show together. Like, I thought the one with Chelsea Handler, the concept was brilliant, that, you know, she was in love with one of the Muppets. I thought that was great. I think...
was that the one where Gonzo was supposed to be doing the stunt?
No, there was the next one.
Okay.
And I love the one with the gun. No, but there's some individual great lines in that. You can see that they've got the right idea some of the times. It's not a complete miss.
No. Yeah. It, for me, watching them go through the season, and the very thing you're talking about, what is it? Big Mean Carl, honestly, is my favorite character out of the show.
Did I get the pot?
You know, just... Yeah. You know, just and likewise, the show with Gonzo supposedly doing the stunt that was sponsored by Piggy Water. I mean, that to me felt like it was old Muppets and new Muppets. They found a way to straddle it. That's what Paul Lee said, that he feels that the show itself, it doesn't have the joy, the laughter, and the heart that it should have. So that's the pressure on these next five scripts, and big-time pressure on getting people to sample the show again, and hopefully seeing an uptick in the numbers, which will allow them to renew it for season two, which then would feed into, it makes sense to make sure the Muppets have a bigger presence in both Disney MGM and DCA, because when Star Wars Land finally opens along with Toy Story Land, people need to understand that Toy Story 4 is running and gunning right now. There's been a lot of talk about if that can in fact be fast-tracked, they want to actually hold the premiere of Toy Story 4 in Florida and have the after party be the opening of Toy Story Land.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of stuff to get done. Toy Story 4 is 2017, May.
So they've got to, that's a lot to get done in the next 18
months. That's a lot to
months.
Get done. So in the great land of wishful thinking, that can get done.
Speaking of other construction, and then we'll close out this episode. We noticed that there were some height balloons, some test height balloons.
Oh, yeah.
Over at Fantasia Mini Golf, over by the Swan and Dolphin, and across the street from Disney's Hollywood Studios. And there's some interesting speculation about what this might be for. Everything from a mini resort or a small parking garage on that particular piece of land to test balloons that simulated the height of things for the new Star Wars land to see how far away they would be visible outside the park. Any idea of what's going on with those test height balloons? There were more than, right at 100 feet in the air, which is way too tall for mini golf, right?
The Walt Disney World Resort has two miniature golf courses. We have the Fantasia Miniature Golf with Fantasia Fairways and Fantasia Gardens, opened May of 1996, and then we have Winter Summerland, which opened up at Blizzard Beach in March of 1999. In the interim, we've also seen the miniature golf course open at Universal Studios.
Which is a lot of fun. It's a very good golf course.
Yeah, no, the two parks there. And just this past November at IAAPA, we had the Holy Land Experience announced that it's opening its Trinity miniature golf course. So there's kind of an oversaturation in the miniature golf field, and that's the belief on Disney property. That if you think about it, the amount of money that's being poured into Disney Hollywood Studios and the IPs that are about to come online there, this suddenly becomes a very desirable piece of property. Very close to what they're hoping, when all the work is done, will become Disney's number two park. I mean, stepping over Epcot and Animal Kingdom to become, you know, the next go-to park after the Kingdom. There's a number of things under consideration here, and one of the weirder ideas is that coming on the heels of Disney right now is actually in very serious competition when it comes to Orlando Kissimmee job market. Universal has become a very hot property. There's great word of mouth among people who work there about this is a good supportive company, and it's fun to be a team member. And if you live in the Orlando area, you don't have to drive the additional 10 plus miles up to Disney. And so Disney is suddenly in a weird position in that it's actually competing with Universal. I mean, Disney still is the top dog in the market, but Universal is doing things like, for example, they built on the heels of the Wizarding World Diagon Alley in a multi-story enclosed parking structure right behind Universal Studios Florida. They've just announced that they're expanding that. When you're an hourly employee who works at a theme park and it's the end of your day and you step off of the transportation system, and it's one of those wonderful light Florida rains, and you have to schlep back to your car, that's not a happy way to end your day. Where on the other hand, to have your car in an enclosed parking structure with the sun not beating down on it, so when you sit down, your buck cheeks don't suddenly become roasted rump roast. This is something that people really value. Disney is aware of this. The other thing that I think is very significant, gives you some idea of what the expansion plans for this park, Disney Hollywood Studios, are. Mm-hmm. That, all right, if we're going to give our cast members some place to park and that they can get quickly in and out of the park to work and still have all of these new, the Toy Story Land, the Star Wars Land, and the yet-to-be-named Cars Land.
Something in your throat there, Jim?
Sorry.
Okay. All right.
You need some place for people to park and for them to get easily in and out of the park. And so there's discussion of creating a multi-use space that would include a multi-story parking garage and a walkway over Buena Vista Drive there to get the cast members in.
Wow.
And I know, as unlikely as that sounds, in Anaheim right now, across from the Team Disney building, they are building a multi-story parking garage for the cast members who work there.
So, and that's the thing. I mean, when you're talking about established properties, whether it's Anaheim or that area around the studios and the Epcot resorts, it's not like you can just push the Swan and Dolphin back a quarter of a mile to build more parking lots. You can't go horizontal anymore. You've got to go vertical.
Absolutely. The other thing just to keep in mind here is that everyone looks at Florida and it's like 40 square miles. And it's like, okay, you could just pave, knock down some trees, put in a parking lot. And it's like, if you're in that market and you're competing for cast members to create another remote parking lot and make it that much more difficult for people to get into work. We talked earlier about, for example, what happened to the Plura employees who were working at Downtown Disney, Disney Springs, who during the holiday season were basically told, look, park at Epcot,
yeah.
We'll shuttle you back and forth, and by the way, you need to show up a half hour ahead of your shift to make sure that you can handle this transportation system.
And they can't do that. They can't do that forever because if you think about it too, the amount of construction that's going on I-4 through 2020 or 2021, that's adding easily half an hour to their commute. So really what you're telling potential employees, you know, if you're Disney is, you got to leave an hour earlier if you want to come work for us. And oh, by the way, it's $10 an hour job with no benefits. Mm-hmm. That is not a winning sales pitch, I don't think. So they've got to do everything that they can to keep those people happy.
I guess in closing, be honest, Glenn, do you think anybody is really going to be missing Lights, Motor, Action? Or
no, I don't think so. I think my favorite memory of Lights, Motor, Action is meeting Robbie Knievel at the press event for it. And I think I'm a huge Robbie Knievel fan. I think he's super cool. But the show itself had suffered from pacing problems since its inception. It never got better. It had a huge capacity and was never full. I'm not sorry to see it go the way I would be sorry for many other things. So that's fine.
This came with the 50th anniversary. And the whole gimmick at that point was that they were bringing this highly successful show over from Paris. I mean, it had opened March of 2002 over there. And the real hope was it was at the back of the park and it would drive people back there. In fact, there was a secondary plan that if it had been successful, they were going to drop shops and restaurants into those empty facades against Streets of America. And they were going to have these overflow crowds that were waiting to get into what was supposed to be 3 and 4 stunt shows a day.
I think they now that there are days where they run 3. So wow. It happens. That's fine. I mean, if people want to see it, it's still available in France. But I think it's one of those shows, though, where you really don't lose anything by watching it on YouTube. And that's sad to say. Some very talented performers there. I hope they can find other work.
But, I agree. Yeah. It's always tough. This is the Walt Disney Company looking at The Force Awakens doing better than it ever anticipated. So it's like, we go now. We commit now.
And oh, no. I mean, I think the philosophy of Disney's management, by the way, this is what I'm going to title this episode. We have to destroy the studios in order to save it. That's going to be the title of this episode.
Okay.
And on that, you've been listening to the Unofficial Guide Disney Dish Podcast with Jim Hill. Please go into iTunes and Stitcher and rate our show and tell us what you would like to hear next. We are produced by the fabulous Aaron Adams. For Jim, this is Len. We will see you on the next show.
Take care.